Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends. Welcome to my favorite part of the afternoon, spending time with you, finding hope for healthy families. That is the prescription on order, and I'm confident that we will find it. Praise the Lord, it is no longer Monday. I don't know about you, but yesterday felt very Monday-ish to me. It felt like we're still in recovery mode from Hurricane Beryl. We have construction going on. I cannot guarantee you what might come our way during the show, but it is all great. It's progress, it's recovery, and that is important. If you've been listening since January, you know I've challenged you to adopt 52 Habits for Healthy Families this week. I'll be talking about that habit on Friday on Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday. We'll be talking about keeping your kids safe when they play. Now, this isn't just kindergartners. This is all across the lifespan. And if you are like me, I have to keep my husband safe when he plays because he still likes to play like he's a kid. And he'll tell me in my head, I feel 21, but then my body says, no, sir, I do not think so. And so we'll talk about keeping our families safe when they play as we work through some of these summer safety habits. And today we are going to be talking about our hearts and our worldview, which is a great habit to have. We've got a great guest for you. My guest today is Jeremy Carroll. Now, he is the Lifeway Kids Ministry Publishing Manager for Hi-Fi, VBS, and Kids Discipleship Resources. Before coming to Lifeway, he served in a variety of church staff positions, and he continues to serve each week in the kids ministry of his church. Jeremy earned a Master of Arts in Christian Education from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Jeremy and his wife have 6 children. I think it's safe to say, Jeremy, that you are personally and professionally invested, just like I am, in kids. So welcome to the show. We're going to be talking about your book, Flip the Script, Disrupting Tradition for the Sake of the Next Generation. So glad to have you, Jeremy. Thanks for being on with us.
Well, I'm excited to be here and love talking with parents and ministry leaders and all folks who are impacting the next generation. There's a lot to talk about, and we're real grateful for the opportunity that we have at Lifeway to partner with churches and with families to do just that.
And we all have our part to play. I mean, we really do. Kids are craving authenticity. They're looking for people who are willing to spend time with them, who are willing to engage in conversation about tough things. And I have to be honest with you, Jeremy, because I love tradition. I am really like into tradition, and we're going to talk about disrupting that. So I'm stepping out of my comfort zone. I'm inviting my listeners to do the same. And before we dive into that, Jeremy, just tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to know the Lord.
Yeah, it's a good opportunity to do that. So I grew up in the South. I grew up in what I would deem as a Christian family, a church-going family, and we'll probably get into some of the statistics there. I'm in that Generation X where still a lot of families went to church regularly, 2-3 times a week, and that was my household growing up. And around the age of 7, 8 years old is when I really felt the Lord pressing on me, in Lifeway Kids language, we call it the ABCs. We call it admit to God that you're mm-hmm. a sinner, confess, believe that Jesus is God's own son. Oftentimes we'll use that kind of language that Jesus is who he says he is. He is God in human form, and he came to pay a price for sin that I couldn't pay on my own. Started to get that really real to me. ABC, confess that your faith is Jesus is Lord. And that really, so I was led to the Lord through a series of partnerships with our pastor, our music minister at our church, who happened to be my best friend's dad, my parents, in our home in South Arkansas at the time, and really God set me on a trajectory from that moment on because I was close to ministry people. Again, my best friend's dad was a ministry leader to serve the local church, and so I did that for a time. through middle school, high school, served my local church, went to seminary after college, served on church staff, and I've just really been pointing, God's been really pointing and pricking my heart to serve the local church, to serve parents in ministry, and I have six kids of my own, and so a lot of this hits really close to home for me.
Oh, it absolutely does. You know, your whole perspective changes when you have kids and you realize what is at stake for in the next generation. And I'm in the same generation as you, Jeremy. I'm Gen X. And you're right. When I'm looking at some of these statistics that are in this book, we see that in each generation, identifying as a Christian and church attendance is decreasing. So we see the silent generation, 84% identifying as Christian, baby boomers, 76%, Gen X, you and me, 67%. That's still two-thirds, Jeremy. And millennials, 49%. And we know that that is really decreasing very rapidly with Gen Z and Gen Alpha. And then when you also say in this book, between 1948 and 2009, church membership declined 15 percentage points. That is in, I'm not really good at math, but that's in about 60 years. But in the last 10 years, church membership declined 14 percentage point, the same as in the last 10 years as it was in the last 60 years before that. So what in the world is going on? And then we see, of course, church attendance decreasing even more since COVID. There was a rapid deceleration with that. What is your view on this? What is going on? Why is this happening so quickly?
Yeah, so there are probably a number of factors. And I think I dug around a little bit. It looks like from the millennials, and we didn't have this research for our Flip the Script book, but a couple of folks put out some research last year that says Gen Z is now tracking at about 36%, so another 13 percentage point loss of who attend religious services at least once a month. And we're seeing this trend continue to go down. And, of course, COVID had a big part of that. You mentioned that. One thing that is not new, but sometimes we need to take a fresh look at it, is what's happening in the churches and what's happening in the homes and therefore what's happening in the culture around. And so there was a time where in generations past where churches and faith were the center of society, and there were there was an implication that you were part of a church community. And as we have seen the embracing of secularism around us in the culture, things become more bold, things become I hate to use this language, but you almost have to, becoming almost anti-Christian, if not if just apathetic to Christianity, in some cases would be blatantly against that. You just see that diminishing and pressing that down. That's kind of happening at the church level, but then at the cultural level, we're seeing this worldview that's pushing in, that it just seems generation by generation, it is gaining more and more ground, a difference of worldview that moves from a place where churches are a safe place and they're not just teaching good things, but they're a place where we find community and where you use that word authentic. Mm-hmm. That has not changed, I think, from generation to generation. Gen Z, teens and young adults, Gen Alpha kids, they are looking for authentic relationships. They're wanting to meet a need there that they may not know that they have, but they're trying to meet that need. And unfortunately, what we've kind of seen in our research is that by doing things the way we've always done them, we're kind of getting the result that we have, and things these kids, this next generation is going, some of them are going to church because of their families, but when they get to church, they're finding maybe less authentic relationships than what they want, and they're going and pushing themselves to other places to find those authentic relationships that they desperately need.
That is what they're looking for. And we talk a lot about worldview. And of course, as Christians, we want our kids to grow up with a biblical worldview. But I'm reading from your book, Flip the Script here. And it says that today's worldview is primarily shaped by expressive individualism. Now, this may be a new term to our listeners. So let me read here the definition that's given in the book. Expressive individualism suggests not only a desire to pursue one's own path, but also a yearning for fulfillment through the definition and articulation of one's own identity. It is a drive to be both more like whatever you already are, and also to live in society by fully asserting who you are. The capacity of individuals to define the terms of their own existence by defining their personal identities is increasingly equated with liberty and with the meaning of some of our basic rights, and it is given pride of place in our self-understanding. Now, that was a lot of words, honestly, Jeremy, but I see this. I see this really diametric situation setting up here. So on the one hand, kids today are defined by expressive individualism. They're encouraged to be themselves, to be as different as they possibly can. And yet they have this craving for a need to belong. So how are cultural identity and the need to belong related to each other? Because they seem like they're opposed, and yet we see them tied together here.
Yeah, they really are inseparable. And so I mentioned that the need to belong is really not anything new. And in fact, if you go back for 1940s somewhere, I think Abraham Maslow has his hierarchy of needs, and that's number mm-hmm. three on his tier. And so for many, many years, and I would argue even to the point of biblical narrative, Genesis chapter 2, God's creating humanity and says that it's not good for a man to be alone. So I'm going to make a helper that corresponds to him. And we see that need for belonging and relationship built deep into the DNA of humanity. And what we have seen over the course of time, I think, and again, you've got secularism, expressive individualism kind of creeping in, but the way you described it, I think, is exactly right, because you've got these juxtaposition of, or these pressing together of ideas where, on one hand, it sounds like the loud cultural voices that we hear are saying, be yourself, be true to yourself, but at the same time, the deep need is to fit in. The deep need that everybody has is to find a group where they belong. And some who are, you know, Gen X or older might even call out, there's an old TV show theme song, Go Where Everybody Knows Your Name, right? And even mm-hmm. that something long ago, for many people, that you can hear that ringing in your ears. But even then, it was, we need to go a place. We need to find a place. And so we're going to go to a place where we can, whether that's affirming of our self-definition or whether that's helping create a new identity based on that group, people are going to go where they are. And so, or go where they feel like they fit in, go where they feel like they have a connection mm-hmm. point, a real authentic relationship. Sometimes that can be the church, and we hope that's what the case is, but sometimes that we're finding, in fact, the question you asked earlier, I didn't officially answer it. Mm-hmm. So let me circle back real quick. And that is, when research is being done about why kids are leaving the church, we start looking at the reasons that people said that they leave the church. 7 out of 10 kids, it's estimated, roughly, will leave the church after 18. Many of those reasons that are given are relational.
That's right. Like, hold on. I'm going to hold you right there, Jeremy. I'm going to hold you right there, because we're up against a break, because there's so much more to discuss. And I have talked about this controversial subject, but I've written about it. But I think that's the pull of Taylor Swift, because they want community. Kids want community, identity, and belonging. And if we are not providing a compelling alternative, there are plenty of alternatives to compete with us. So when we come back, we're going to continue this really important conversation, and we'll talk about flipping the script and how do we do that. Don't go away. I'll be right back with more from Jeremy Carroll. A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there is an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. You see, when a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 underwrites ultrasounds for the entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. I trust in God. Welcome back, friends, and thank God that He will never fail, because I will tell you, I fail all the time on a daily basis. Sometimes it's hourly, sometimes it's minutely. I know that's not even a word, but I am failing all the time, and thank God that He will never fail and that we can trust Him. And we're talking today to Jeremy Carroll, the Lifeway Kids Ministry Publishing Manager, and we're talking about the book Flip the Script. Now, the authors of this book are Chuck Peters, Jana Magruder, and Stephanie Salvatore, and they're talking about disrupting tradition for the sake of the next generation. Now, before the break, I was talking about this just kind of what seems opposite, that this generation of kids, Gen Z, they value cultural identity and they see things in culture. Let me just read to you some of the quotes from the book that are representative of what messages kids are getting. So, for example, from the movie The Flash, or from The Flash, DC Comics, life doesn't give us purpose, we give life purpose. From the movie Coco, the rest of the world may follow the rules, but I must follow my heart. From the movie Princess Diaries, whatever choice you make, let it come from your heart. Or even Let It Go from Frozen. It's time to see what I can do to test the limits and break through. No right, no wrong, no rules for me. I'm free. These are some of the kind of messages that they're getting, and to say, hey, be your own person, be an individual, be whoever you want to be. But at the same time, there is this powerful gravitational pull for community because kids are lonely. So I was talking about Taylor Swift, and why is she so popular? Well, the pull of Taylor Nation is community. Her fans spend hours together dissecting hidden meanings in her lyrics, and that's intentional. They speak the same language. They know the same. They have community in their culture because they know this culture. And those searchers find community with other searchers. And that's really what young people are looking for, to be seen, to be known, to be loved, and to know they are not alone. And so they're trying to find it on their own. But the truth is, that in a world saturated with these kinds of messages, there and when there are no boundaries, no moral compass, when anything goes, kids can be anxious and afraid because nothing is off limits. and the world feels unpredictable. And we know the status of our hearts is not very great. We are prone to wander. We are prone to sin. And so when we're depending on our own selves, that is something that is always going to disappoint. And reading from this book, some of the other statistics, which I've talked about frequently on this show, is the mental health of this generation, which I definitely see boots on the ground. It is terrible. 53% of Gen Z report that the biggest challenge they faced during the pandemic was their mental health. But here's something I really want you to listen to. 61% of Gen Z say adults in their lives don't truly know the extent of their struggle. They really don't feel seen or known or supported. And if we want to influence this generation's worldview, we must start by viewing the world honestly as they see it, even if we disagree with it, because we have to know what they're seeing so that we can guide them for sure. So, Jeremy, I want to bring you back into this conversation because there's so much important things to talk about here. Why do you think that we are losing Gen Z? And how can parents and grandparents really roll up their sleeves and get to work to reach the hearts of Gen Z and Gen Alpha?
I think we're kind of losing some credibility. So some of those quotes that you mentioned from the cultural worldview that's kind of honestly screaming in the next generation's ears of, you be you, follow your heart, you set your own path. You are the authority, essentially, is what all those comments are saying. And the culture is loud and clear on that. And because of that, it's creating a sentiment of distrust. And that's one of the things about expressive individualism, is that there's this distrust and mistrust of authority. And so when church ministry leaders and parents, even grandparents, other adults, significant adults in the lives of kids and students are looked at as with a filter of distrust already, it's hard for us to kind of break through that. Like that other statistic, they don't understand. So they don't understand, and combine that with distrust, and it causes us to as adults, I think, and this is kind of what we're saying in Flip the Script, is sometimes we respond negatively to that. We kind of bow up and say, oh, well, if you're not going to trust me, I'm going to show you who the authority is. And from my generation, that's kind of the way things were.
Yeah.
You know,
my way or the highway.
Exactly. Right. And so in this generation, because of all of the circumstances that they're in, their current reality, they don't understand this kind of bow up situation. And so what we're saying in Flip the Script is, maybe we need to look at this from a different vantage point. We need to flip our tendencies are to protect our authority, to come alongside, to get down in the weeds, to get down side by side on the ground with them and show them, one, we authentically care. We authentically want their best. I have this conversation with my own. I literally had this conversation with my 13-year-old on Saturday, where he's like, you know, I'm trying to do my thing, and why don't you just let me do my thing? I know what's best. I don't need college. I don't need all these things. And I said, you're 13. You don't know what you don't know yet.
Right.
But that's the mentality. Is me today, whatever I know today is good enough forever. I know what I need to know for now. And we just have this mistrust and lack of authority and distrust of authority. And that's causing a fracture in the relational paradigm that I think many of us in my generation have taken for granted. That we just assume that there's a relational connection and we have that authority. And because we have the authority, we're going to have a connection, a true, authentic connection. And many in this generation, because all the voices they hear are saying, be true to yourself, you define your own stuff. We're losing that ground because we don't have inherited authority. We need to earn that in a sense.
I'm reading from the book, 66% of church kids stop attending church regularly between the ages of 18 to 22. My oldest daughter is in college, and she and I have had this very conversation about just how important it is for that transition to happen and for faith to be their own. And when I'm looking at the top reasons that they stop going. You're listing a lot of relational reasons that church members seemed judgmental or church members seemed hypocritical. They weren't practicing what they preached. I never felt connected to the students in my youth ministry, and I feel disconnected from the people at my church, or I only went to please my parents. And I think you're onto something really important here, Jeremy, because when we talk about, you know, my way or the highway, which is how Gen X was raised for sure.
Right.
The thing that has been disruptive is the information superhighway. So now when we say my way or the highway, they're like, okay, great. I have plenty of sources of information. I mean, before our parents could cut off our money. I mean, I don't know about you, Jeremy, but when I went on my honeymoon, we didn't even have a credit card. We had traveler's checks. Like, did you ever have traveler's checks? Like, we had very limited resources, but now kids can download a banking app really easily. They can sell their toys online. They can have a side gig, a side hustle. They can find other echo chambers that are going to reinforce the messages that, oh, your parents are out of touch. They don't know. They don't understand. We know. We understand. And so providing that compelling alternative is so important to make, to be irreplaceable. And you have a framework. There's a framework in this book that's FLIP. It's F-L-I-P, Friends, Leaders, Influencers, and Pastors. Can you talk us through that?
Yeah. That's how we frame it in the book. To zoom out of that just a little bit, typically when I teach this to ministry leaders, I usually boil it down to say kids, students, the next generation, they need three core relationships in their life. There are many nuances, but three core relationships, kid to kid or student to student, kid to adult, student to adult, and third, kid to Jesus. And so kid to kid or student to student, that's that FLIP, that's acronym for Friends, Leaders, Influencers, and Pastors. And we know we needed this when we were in childhood and growing up, and we know that teenage years, that adolescence years, things are starting to shift to looking for validation. We know this from just history of psychology and just life. We know that in that adolescence, that focus is shifting away. But friends, kids and students, preschoolers, they need friends. They need to, and typically in Flip the Script, we're talking about at church specifically, but as parents, as grandparents, as teachers, we need to recognize that these are core relationships they need to have, and particularly those who are in elementary school, like our Gen Alpha kids, those first to fifth graders, recognize that they were having those core developmental moments right around COVID.
Yeah.
And so they need friends. And if we're not as leaders in their life, adults, whoever that is, if we're not trying to recognize they need friend-to-friend relationships, kid-to-kid, student-to-student relationships, they need to have these. Now, as adults, we need to kind of steer that. Another author that I really appreciate is Dr. Tim Elmore, and he says we need to help guide and be interpreters of things more than just giving information. And so we need to help interpret those relationships so that they're not looking for the relationships in the wrong places. But friends is the core relationship. They need to have moments in their life where they are just being kids or just being preschoolers or just being students and bonding over something in their space. Sports teams are really good for this. Gaming platforms tend to be on the rise for these kinds of things. But friends, particularly at church, I would say that's kind of where my area or lane is. When kids go to church, when students go to church, they need to know that they can find a friend there, someone who understands them, cares about them, and, you know, wants to have some kind of relationship with them. Then the kid-to-adult or student-to-adult relationship, we break that down by leaders, influencers, and pastors. So first one's friends. That's the F in FLIP. Then leaders, influencers, pastors. Leaders would be at church. It would be that core leader. If you're in the school system, that would be that primary teacher. If you're an adult or a grandparent, you could be considered as that primary leader, whoever that leader is, that you know that child and you have already established a relationship and earned some level of trust with that child or student. That's a leader. And then influencers, we expand that out to say that's other adults in the room, or in the case for kids ministry, for example, that might be a high school student who's serving in the kids ministry, or a middle school student, or a college student who's serving in the kids ministry, but they still have influence in that child's life. And then again, in the church context, we say FLIP: friends, leaders, influencers, and pastors. We always at Lifeway Kids want to challenge pastors to get involved in their kids and their student ministries at their church. Let their kids know that, that you, pastor, are their pastor too. You're not just a pastor for the adults. You are the pastor of the kids and the students and anyone who's at that church, and be their shepherd. And you're not just a guy on the stage somewhere. And so we've identified these relationships, friends, leaders, influencers, pastors. These are core to a church ministry experience. And then as parents and grandparents, we can come alongside. And so, yes, we identify that these parents or these types of relationships are super, super important. And all of these relationships, again, being selective and interpretive to help, all of these relationships need to be pointing kid to Jesus, student to Jesus, being faith-filled kinds of conversations and relationships to guide them on their faith journey.
Well, you know, we have decades and decades of research support now to affirm the idea that kids who are in a healthy family, who engage in faith practices together, who pray together, who go to church together, it really lowers risk-taking behaviors for kids. They're less likely to engage in risk-taking behaviors like sexual risk-taking behaviors and drugs, and they tip to have better mental health, like lower risk of anxiety and depression. And those things are all really good. And I'm looking at this framework here in the book talking about, you know, kids coming in feeling like an outsider and being afraid of being embarrassed or left out, and then giving them some psychological safety and comfort and making them think, okay, somebody knows my name, somebody's going to talk to me. And then you move to inclusion, being included in those group activities. And then participating, like actively experiencing that group identity, and then they can learn. Once they have those things, they can learn. And that looks pretty accurately reflective of a kid's experience to me. And one of the interesting things to me, Jeremy, is that we're seeing a pushback from Gen Z on influencer culture, and they want authenticity more than anything. So when you're talking about this flip narrative and influencer, those people who are going to be the best influencers are those who are authentic and who are showing and demonstrating genuine care. That is what they want. And it's fascinating to me because we're seeing kids who want to interact with older generations. They have a fascination with vintage technology or vintage things, you know, things that are older. They want to know. They're curious because we're telling them so much. The world is so different. Well, how is it different? What was your experience? That's what they want to know. And again, when we come back, Jeremy, let's talk through some of these truths that are listed in the book, because I think more than ever, kids need to know truths that are immutable, truths that are not going to change, truths that aren't going to get you canceled tomorrow. They need to know that Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And that is a way we can give them security. So we'll talk more about that. And I'll ask your advice for parents on what do we do with all of this when we come back.
Here's Dr. Ligon Duncan from the American Family Studios documentary, The God Who Speaks.
I think the most striking thing to me about the Bible is that it not only reveals God to me, it is God speaking to us, revealing himself to us. But in the process of teaching us about himself, he reveals so much about who we are. I often tell people that one of the ways that I know that the Bible is true is the way that it diagnoses my sin. I'm often reading through a passage and I'm thinking, this was written 3,000 years ago, and yet it perfectly diagnoses the state of the sin of my heart. The only way that can happen is if my Creator is actually the author of the book.
Visit thegodwhospeaks.org.
I'm
Welcome back, friends. That is one of my new favorite songs. I've witnessed it from Passion. Love that song because we can be so encouraged by the fact that we have witnessed God's faithfulness. And when I'm going through tough times, I can look around and I know that I've witnessed God's faithfulness. I have seen him breathe life into situations and relationships that seemed hopeless and lifeless, but God has breathed life into those. And today we are having a great conversation with Jeremy Carroll, the Lifeway Kids Ministry Publishing Manager. And we're talking about this book, Flip the Script. Now, I wish that you could see this book here, but it is like it's got lots of pictures. So if you are a visual person, it has got lots of graphs and pictures, and it is very practical. It's called Flip the Script, Disrupting Tradition for the Sake of the Next Generation by Chuck Peters, Jana Magruder, and Stephanie Salvatore. So before the break, we were talking, Jeremy, about the truths that are reviewed in this book. And I think more than any time, kids need to know what are immovable, immutable truths that are never going to change because they are living in a world where one sentence, one phrase can get them canceled completely. They're living in a cancel culture, and what is acceptable today is completely unacceptable tomorrow. So I'd love for you to review some of these truths that you review to reinforce in the heart of next generations.
And this is really where we've talked about those two big words, and this really is the heartbeat of Flip the Script is, or the two big takeaways from Flip the Script is that the big cultural question is about identity. Who am I? And the big cultural need of the next generation is where do I belong? Where do I fit in? Mm-hmm. Can I have a place to belong? And these statements really address that identity piece. And so, through lots of biblical study, our team came to the table and we identified 12, what we would say 12 simple biblical identity statements that are core to understanding who we are now and who we're created to be. And it's important for us to think about these identity statements that some of them are universally true. And we'll kind of talk about these as we unpack them, but some of them are universally true. They're true for all people at all times. That's just that is the reality of being created in the image of God. There are some others of these truths that are not universally true, but they are universally accessible through Jesus. And so some of those things we need to identify. But if we're going to address this question, who am I? That's the big cultural question. Kids all over the world, all ages of the next generation are asking, who am I? What we want to do is we want to take them to their creator, to their designer, and say, the God of the universe has already spoken a definition of who you are and who you're created to be. And so we want to unpack those from scripture. What are some of those statements? And so we do this through these 12 identity statements. And we've kind of walked through a few mm-hmm. of them here. The first one that we start with is I am known. This speaks directly both to identity and belonging because, as we've already been saying, what are kids looking for? They're looking for a place to be known, where they fit in, where they belong. They want to know that somebody sees them, authentically cares about them. And so when we say I am known, what we're saying is God knows you. God truly knows you. He knows everything about you. And he not only does he know you, but he wants a relationship with you. Now, and that idea of being known can sometimes be a little vulnerable. I think for mm-hmm. adults, we think that. For kids, they think that too, even if they may not be able to articulate that. They realize that, oh, if somebody really knows the thoughts that are in my head, that can be a little intimidating or make me feel vulnerable or insecure. But the beauty of the fact, and this is why we have 12 of these statements, is that the I am known biblical truth is God knows you. He knows all about you. He sees you, and he wants to have a relationship with you. And you know that nothing is hidden from him. So when he says he wants to have a relationship with you, he's not saying, oh, but if I find out about that other thing, then no, the deal's off. No, he's saying, I already know all of those things, and I still want to have a relationship with you. And this idea of flip that we talked about earlier, friends, leaders, influencers, pastors, those allow us as adults in their lives to be the hands and feet, to know them. We get to show them in real time, in physical proximity. Hey, I see you. I know you. I know that you like to play a sport. I know that you play a musical instrument, or you like to sing or dance or gymnastics or whatever it may be. Those flip relationships give us an opportunity to live this out and point them to Jesus, who knows them and wants a relationship with them. So I am known. We have a truth circle that we typically use for our curriculum that's based off of this book. And we start with I am known because of that reason. It's so, so critical. There are a couple of others that are really tied to this I am known. Another one is I am uniquely designed. The gifts you have, the talents you have, the passions you have, God as the creator is also the designer. He loves you, he cares about you, and he made you the way that you are. So this one can be a little tricky when we're trying to help disrupt not just the tradition, but the cultural voices in their head. That we go, okay, that doesn't mean you get to do whatever you want and say, oh, that's how I'm made. No, that's not what we're saying. What we're saying is God knows you, he designs you, and because he knows you and wants to have a relationship with you, this design means that it's going to lead you to lean into God's design for you, not just your own personal desires and your own personal things that you want to do. So I'm uniquely designed. God as not just creator, not just Lord over everything, but he actually designed you. And the Bible tells us that he knows us. In the book of Psalms tells us he knows us. Another one is I am never alone. This is where we want to say we know that, I think you cited the quote earlier, or the statistic earlier rather, that talked about loneliness and, mm-hmm. and the state of mental health. Kids are fearful of being lonely. These devices give us this false sense of being connected all the time, and the pressure that goes along with that. We can kind of put that aside and realize that the God of the universe, the one who created me, the one who designed me, he is with us, and he has gone to such great lengths to be with us, to send Jesus as Emmanuel, God with us, to be with us at all times. And we need to help our kids through that. Yeah, we can be there for our kids, our grandkids, or the students in our class, and we can be there for them, but ultimately, and we should be there for them as much as we're able, but what we really want to do is help them to find peace and comfort that God's presence is better. I am never alone. And then the last one, kind of in this category of this bucket about how God cares about us, is that I am loved. Now, this one and I am known are so closely intertwined, because we are loved by God. God, we cannot lose God's love. We cannot do anything to push God's love outside. Like, we are loved by God. Doesn't mean that it takes there's a lot of things that we can unpack in that, but what it means is that God it calls back to I am known. He knows you, he loves you, he created you, he designs you, he wants a relationship with you. It is not something that we earn. It's not based on us and what we do or whether or not we're behaving in a certain way. God's love is so amazing that it is a gift to be received. And so those four are kind of one grouping that we use to talk about I'm known, I'm uniquely designed, I'm never alone, I'm loved. God deeply has a passion for who you are and for you as a person. Then we talk about some other things.
Well, I was just going to say, Jeremy, that's what we're talking about in providing a compelling alternative, because there are sources in the world that are saying, oh, we know you, we love you, you're never alone. But those things are fleeting and they're temporary, mm-hmm. and they're people who fail us and people who change when standards are changing, you know, because their definition of love is not God's definition of love. And I think those are really powerful, and it sounds so simple. And I think sometimes parents want something, you know, more complex than that, but it's like, no, this, you are known and you are loved by God. He uniquely designed you just as you are, and you are never alone. I mean, those are the core messages that this generation wants to hear. And then you go into the next group, the next four is, however, here's your position before God. Yeah. And I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah, so this is part of, we need to recognize, yes, we're known, we're loved, all of those things, we're never alone. But there's also that's sort of the good news, like you said. But then there's also this, well, we have to deal with the current reality. And if we don't have a relationship with God already, then we're broken. We have a heart problem. It's not just a matter of our behavior being broken, but we are distant from God because we're doing things our way and not his way. Sometimes we define this as being sinful, doing things that are against God and his nature. But we had this broken relationship, and in our curriculum, we really unpacked that not only are we broken, but the world's broken, and there's lots of brokenness around us. And again, if we look around us, we can see all the hurt and hate and destruction in our world that has come as a result of this. But we're kind of part of that system. But the follow-up to that is, yes, we're broken, but we can be forgiven. Like, we can be someone who has this sin nature, this sin problem, but God has stepped in to change that position from just being someone who's broken to being someone who's restored and forgiven, and God offers us that forgiveness. And then he moved from there to just being forgiven, but now we're set apart. We're set apart to do God's good work because of our identity in him. He calls us back. This goes back to what I said earlier. It's not just because he knows how he created you doesn't mean that you get to live however you want, whatever's natural, follow your heart kind of stuff. No, he set you apart for good works. And because of our new identities in him, we live differently and we follow him. And then the last one in this category is this idea of I am secure. God's hope is trustworthy. God has an unwavering, certain hope that we can trust. And his presence, the I am never alone piece, his presence gives us that hope that we know that he is with us and he is in control. And even when things seem like they're spiraling away and things are falling apart, because sometimes it feels that way, our kids are feeling that. The depression and the loneliness and the mental health, they're feeling like things are spiraling out of control with no hope. We take them back to God has secured us as people because he loves us, he cares about us, and his hope and presence are trustworthy.
So to review, here's where we are. We've talked about God's passion for me, for our kids. I am known. I am uniquely designed. I am never alone. I am loved. But my position before God is I am broken, but I am forgiven. I heard you say, Jeremy, but God, and that is just the greatest two words in the history of ever. Yeah. But because of God, we are forgiven. I am set apart. I am secure. And then you go on to God's plan for my life and to give our kids a hope and a future, just like God says that he would in Jeremiah 29:11. We all know that verse, that God made us to have a hope and a future. And these truths are, I am made for community. I am meant to know God. I am designed for a purpose, and I am here to share Jesus. And we're almost out of time, Jeremy. I want to make sure that I ask you this question before we leave. So where does this leave parents? Because I think we're all grappling with this. We're all thinking, okay, we know the world is changing. We know we've got to change our approach in some ways while not changing the timeless truths that we're teaching, not changing what we're teaching, but how we're teaching it. We're not changing what we want as a goal for our relationship, but how we get there. So what last words of advice do you have for parents who are in the middle of this saying, I know all of this, but somehow I'm having trouble pulling it together?
Well, I go to scripture. The Bible says that all scripture is God breathed or inspired by God and profitable for teaching, rebuking, correcting, and training in righteousness so that the man of God can be complete, equipped for every good work. I go to there, 2 Timothy 3:16-17. And I go there because teaching, rebuking, correcting, training, those are all, even though Paul's not talking about parental responsibility, those are all parental things. Those are all things that we do as parents, teaching, rebuking, correct, and train. And so we go back to what do we need to do? What's our challenge? So we need to go back and lead and challenge and discipline and correct. We need to do all those things. But here's the thing, is those things are best accomplished when they're using the relationship as the conduit for these parental responsibilities, where we go and we discipline in a way that a child doesn't feel rejected as a parent. They just feel disciplined and corrected. And so as a parent, we want to make sure that we're walking through them by helping them see and reinforce the core truths, these daily truths. And so I think we got a free giveaway you may mention in a second. To help summarize these truths. But then we can do that in our homes, just reinforce the identity truths, reinforce who they are created to be, and then work through those relationships for the day-to-day parenting things. Work through those relationships. Let your kid know that they're for them, that you are for them, that you're in their corner, that you love them and care about them. And then partner with your church.
Amen and amen. You are saying all of the things that we say. I am just convinced, Jeremy, that there is no obstacle that we can't navigate when we have a healthy relationship that is based on Christ between parent and child. And there is a free download from Lifeway just for our listeners, a poster with these truths on it to remind you. You can find that in our show notes on the podcast, or you can find it on the Facebook link right there where we're streaming the show. That is just for our listeners here at American Family Radio. Well, listen, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make His face shine upon you. And we'll see you right back here tomorrow where we'll keep talking about finding hope for healthy families.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.